Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Open Paddock Live, the third edition of our live show here being presented by ETV Live and also being played on ETV Live Radio, where you can get open things like the Open Paddock podcast live streaming on your mobile device, as well as race commentary from all the great sim broadcasting that we have here at ETV Live. Sean Peachin joining you, as I always do. This week I have with me, of course, Mike Weitzel. Hello, Mike.
Good evening, everyone.
And rejoining us this week, we have Doug Patterson. Hello, Doug.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome back to the rural Missouri. As you and Mike had a splendid weekend, I'm sure, out at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course.
Yeah, you should try coming out to that sometime, Sean.
You know what? I'm about 5 seconds away from pimp-slapping you for that. You know, I was the first one. I came and I stayed at your house, and we had beverages, played Dirt 2, and did all kinds of fun shit. And now, because I haven't made it in 2 years, because I kind of got some stuff going on, it's my fault. Well, 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 whatever. All right, anyways, you know, that's, you know, whatever. I'm done. So I digress, as they say. So, well, we got a great show for you lined up, as we'll have some great reports coming in from both Mike and Doug, who were at this weekend's festivities. Obviously, Mid-Ohio was the home to quite a few different racing series this weekend. We obviously had the IZOD IndyCar Series. We had the SCCA World Challenge. I do believe that the USF 2000 cars were out there.
Yes.
And ALMS also was there, so a great weekend, and we'll also be going out to our friends and the Firestone Indy Lights, as well as the Star Mazda Series, who were live in their own headlining event in Trois-Rivières, just north of the border. So it's going to be a great show. We're happy that everybody could be here with us this week, and without further ado, I think we should just go ahead and kick off with the Motorsports in Brief, boys.
Sounds good.
So, all right. Well, Motorsports in Brief. We're going to go ahead and start things across the pond out in Finland. What better place to start than Finland? For the WRC, because we have the WRC in Finland, Rally Finland, the Neste Royal Oil, Rally Finland. I'm tripping all over myself now. It's brilliant.
A little too much Finlandia?
Too much Finlandia. Actually, tonight I'm not partaking in the vodka. I've got some coffee here from my new Keurig machine. I bought a Keurig machine, and I'm really excited about it. Yeah. So I'm having some of that as I'm going on about 3 hours of sleep, and I've been working some pretty horrendous days, as I was telling you boys before the broadcast. So it's been crazy, 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 but I'm here to do the show, and I've had just a little too much caffeine. It's put me a little bit over the edge, but it's all right, because a hyper Sean is better than a drunk, stumbling, retarded Sean. So that's always a plus. So, but let's go out to Finland. It was the race. It was the WRC's 500th points paying race. Kind of didn't even know was coming. Yeah, I did not know that was happening at all. But Sebastian Loeb, who qualified first and picked position on the road, took the win at Rally Finland. Surprise, surprise. Ahead of Mikko Hirvonen and Jari Matti Latvala. So a great fight. Citroën continuing to dominate, and you figured they would, because one of the things that we've seen is that what Sebastian Loeb was lacking when he was racing against Mikko Hirvonen, he now has because of Mikko Hirvonen. All those areas where Hirvonen used to capitalize on Loeb in the championship, now he is getting that information, and he is just pounding, and that Citroën team is just pounding forward into the ground. I mean, it's really bad. When you look at the championship as a whole, because I mean, it's just not even close anymore. I mean, he's just walking away with it. He's won what, everything but like one race, two races.
Yep.
So, but the final results of the rally: Sebastian Loeb wins by 6 seconds over Mikko Hirvonen. Jari Matti Latvala, the first of the factory Fords, he finishes third, a distant 35 seconds off. Petter Solberg fourth, 56 seconds off. Then we're gonna go Mats Osberg, Aitanik. And that's really it as in terms of the big drivers. Other notables: Sebastian Ogier driving the Skoda Fabia S2000 finishes P10, 8 minutes off the pace, but again, completely different formulas. No way the S2000 car is going to keep up with a WRC spec car at Finland, because as we discussed last week on the show, that is a high-speed, super-fast rally that just absolutely pushes you to the limit. So, you know, it's It's a great event, though. I always love it. They introduced some old stages and brought them back, and it was just a great event. And it always saddens me, honestly, to see Rally Finland go. But the thing that's really cool is that with the old show or with the old rallies coming up, because now we go to the we start to go to like France, Germany, Spain, Great Britain, places that we that are, you know, that we're kind of accustomed to seeing on the calendar, and we're kind of moving away from some of the other areas we've gone. Which I guess is one of the things about the WRC that I really enjoy is the calendar's always kind of been a pretty steady thing. Unlike Formula One, where we're constantly pushing new places to push the championship, WRC, you know, you look at Rally Argentina, you look at the Greek Acropolis Rally, those, you know, those have been rich in tradition. But one of the things, you know, it just doesn't get any better.
Oh, wait, no, fail.
Yeah, that might be coming back. Maybe we'll talk about that at a different show.
Can you come back?
But I mean, when you start talking about Rally Great Britain with all the great British drivers that have come through the WRC, Rally Spain, obviously, Rally France with all the phenomenal French drivers that we've seen throughout, you know, obviously home rally to Mr. Sebastian Loeb. I mean, it's just fantastic. I love the second half of the season, but, you know, it's not to say that the first half is necessarily bad. So we had a great round, though. Good job for Sebastian Loeb. With that, though, the championship standings look like this, as Mike pointed out in the show notes, not like they really matter. Sebastian Loeb leads the championship 171 points over teammate Mikko Hirvonen with 128. And Petter Solberg is P3 with 104 points. And I hate to say it, boys, but the championship is, unless something catastrophic happens in Germany and in Italy and Spain, this championship is over because there's no catching them with this kind of a points margin.
I thought it was over.
Without a stray Hinkelstein, this is all for naught.
Mm. Well, you know, even with that, you know, it's going to take more than just one rally. It's going to take them just leaving. You know, the only way that anyone has a chance to compete with Citroën and Loeb is if they just quit. And even then, it might be a stretch.
Well, there are rumors this week that Citroën was for sale.
Yeah, apparently there was rumors saying that. What was it?
Nasser Al-Attiyah
bought them. I was like, "What? No,
who?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, yeah.
Fresh off the victory of what the
fresh
bronze
off of
medal
a bronze medal.
Did
you go from winning a bronze medal to buying a motorsport arm on a damn French manufacturer? Where does that happen?
Well, he came into Citroën with his target shooting gun, you know, and just said, "Let's make a deal."
Yeah, I'm going to make him enough for you.
Now, this would be infinitely cooler if he won Citroën in a poker game.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Indeed.
Wouldn't that be? But anyway, that's the only way I would have ever believed him buying Citroën, or at least a motorsports arm. But are you serious?
Yeah, so it was a serious story, yeah.
Wow. This wasn't a serious joke.
Yeah, it was a serious denial from Citroën as well, so
I doubt
anything comes of that.
Well, what was really funny was that the Citroën motorsport boss, actually when they asked him about it, you know, he just started laughing. He was literally laughing at the prospect of Nasser Al-Attiyah buying it, and all the while the Qatari media is like, "Oh, Nasser's been talking to him. This is gonna happen." And you know, the French boss over at Citroën is like, "You guys are so cute with your I'm on top of the world standings because you won a bronze medal in trap shooting. You're adorable. You're not getting it. Piss off."
Well, speaking of laughable ideas, how was Ken Block's performance in Finland?
Oh, come on now. You're such, you know, I have been down on Ken before because I thought last year was a horrendous year for him. But man, come on. I mean, he's not even saying, "Hey, I'm going to go out there and win." He's just saying, "I'm going out there to compete." I mean, we can't
expect him to go out there and finish a rally.
Well, I know. You know, this is the first time at Rally Finland, and Doug, I'd like to see you work up the balls to go out there to Rally Finland and drive those stages. I wouldn't even drive
a car.
Bull. That is a crock of utter shit. You would not.
Where I live, hook me up with a car. I will attack
you.
That.
Have no idea what you're talking about, Doug. It is absolutely the fastest rally in the world. You're talking 120 miles an hour through the air sideways. Doug, you are a brave soul, but not even myself would tempt fate like that because it would end in fatality. It would end in fatality.
Apparently, Yari Matty Lotfilas training helped him as he exited the rally with what, broken suspension, was it?
Oh, that was Kim Block.
Yeah.
He went over a jump. It was a small jump. Just landed a little light, or a little wrong, funky, and snapped the A-arm loose, and that was it. So, yeah, it wasn't like he did anything super crazy or anything. It just went over a jump, landed wrong, boom. Broken car. So
what's this we hear about ProDrive?
Yeah, well, you know, ProDrive. I really can't make any friggin' excuses anymore for these guys. But ProDrive Mini will no longer compete at Rally GB, their home rally.
I was gonna say, wait a minute.
Their home rally.
Mini.
And their iconic British.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Rally
GB.
What they're doing is focusing on the final three tarmac rounds of 2012, where they will be competing in Germany, France, and Spain. But because of that, they're going to go ahead and push to not do GB. And this is mainly because, you know, Danny Sordo.
Their
car is good. Their car,
on that surface?
Their car is damn good on both surfaces. The problem is that you want to maximize your exposure heading into the 2013 championship, and Danny Sordo is not necessarily the guy that you want racing on. If you can get him on tarmac and try to bring brand awareness and team awareness and sponsorship, you don't want to put Danny Sordo on the gravel. You want him where he shines, and that is on the tarmac.
You definitely want him in Spain.
Well, yeah, you definitely want him at Spain and maybe try to pick up that Santander sponsorship that seems to float around to Spanish drivers. But, I mean, no, seriously, when you look at it from a business standpoint, you don't want to send a guy like Danny Sordo, who's a tarmac expert, onto gravel and have to cost yourself one of those rounds where he could really shine, and that maximizes your opportunity to gain sponsorship. So, you know, I just think that it's a good idea for them to hold off on GB, as much as a huge shot to the home crowd that is. But I mean, when you're looking at it, at the end of the day, it's business, man. And you want to make as much sponsorship dollars to compete in a full 2013 championship as you can, since many has dropped you as their primary factory squad. So you want to put your best results out there. And by putting Danny Sordo in the Mini in Germany, France, and Spain, you give yourself that opportunity. Not to say it's going to happen, but you give yourself that opportunity.
I want you to get out your calendar.
Okay.
I agree.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
I know. Well, I mean, just think of it logically. I mean, it makes sense.
It does.
It's just tough for them.
You're absolutely right.
It sucks
to miss Rally GB. But, yeah, I think you're spot on this, that, you know, they've got to maximize their results as best as they can.
Yeah. Hey, in a story coming fresh off the announcement last week that Pure is no longer funded, and they were shutting down operations for the time being until they get funds, Mercedes came out this week. Norbert Haug came out and said,
"So we're switching gears rapidly here.
We have to. We got to move it."
Oh yeah, we do. I'm sorry. Yep. Let's go to Formula One. I'm sorry. Yeah, let's move to Formula One. This whole hour thing. I get
Mercedes.
It. I'm sorry.
Mercedes, Norbert Haug, he predicts that there are just going to be three engines in 2014. That meaning Mercedes, Ferrari, and Renault. I guess there's an outside chance that Lotus will provide an engine, right?
The jet-powered Formula One engine coming.
That said, you know, this engine formula they crafted to try and attract some new engine participants hasn't worked out because nobody's biting. Pure couldn't get sponsors for their program. Nobody's jumped on board with it, and we're looking like the three old guard are going to continue, and there's probably no chance that Cosworth will. As far as we know, Cosworth hasn't even started developing on this engine. So
what's this mean for Team Lotus?
What about?
I would include Ferrucia and HRT in this, but we know those two suck.
Well, we already know from earlier this year, though, Doug, that the Lotus sponsorship that is on the car is not a sponsorship. It's a badging that they're renting a company.
Hang on. Keep in mind that we've got two different Lotai running around.
What? In IndyCar, or are we talking in Formula One?
No, in Formula One.
No, there's only one Lotus. Forced to change.
That's right. He's what? Air Asia now. Caterham. Thank you, Kevin. Yeah.
Caterham. And then the other one, the proper Lotus team is not Lotus by any stretch, except for that Renault wants to keep.
I know they keep calling it Lotus, and I was so frustrated watching Huckenberg.
The only reason they're still calling it Lotus is because of the Concorde Agreement.
Right.
Lotus is not paying them any money. Lotus owes them $35 million, which they said we'd be happy to give it to you as a loan.
Barsha didn't sign the Concorde Agreement. He didn't have to persist with the absurdity.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm really wondering, Tony Fernandez, his team, Team Caterham, of the three Cosworth teams, they're really the top of that crop, and if they get a proper engine, could they get into the points a couple of times next year?
Who's that?
Well, that'd be in 2014, though.
Well, what team are you talking about? Are you talking about Caterham?
Caterham, yeah.
No. Yeah. They don't make it in the next 2 years. They get close.
Why not?
Maybe 1 point's finish. I'm not saying...
With a non-Cosworth engine.
Are we saying
at that end of the grid, we have to be concerned if they're even there in 2 years.
With Marussia and HRT, I think you're absolutely right. I'm not so certain that... that Fernandez will be so willing to throw in the towel.
Yeah, but pretty much that's
just gonna
wrap up Formula One. That's pretty much all we have to talk about Formula One until next month.
summer break.
Yes,
well, it's coming back.
Anyway.
Well, let's get into what you guys did this weekend. You guys were at the SC. Well, you were at Mid-Ohio, as we already talked about. And you also, Mike, one of your favorite up-and-coming championships is the SCCA World Challenge. And we had Volvos winning in the SCCA.
Yeah, they had something like, what was it, 50-some cars there?
Oh, they
it was insane grid in challenge classes.
Yeah, and then different from last year, there were two Volvos.
They were there last year.
Both? I thought it was only one. Then there were...
I thought maybe they shrunk that...
Whatever the case...
I guess I'd remember for several years them having having two of the K-Pax Volvos.
Okay. But beyond that, the Cadillacs expanded to three cars.
Yes, they did.
From two. So that was interesting to see, but what we saw all weekend at the front of the GT class was the two Volvos and then the three Cadillacs following behind. And Figgy had an engine problem and dropped out in the first race, event. Right. So the Cadillacs, you know, finished kind of a mixture in there. One of the Porsches was able to get in there and mix things up. But day two was all Volvo, because Volvo has all-wheel drive, and it was raining.
the all-wheel drive of the Volvos was the difference maker in that second race. We'd had a torrential downpour, which I wish I could have bottled some of that and brought it back here. I after being gone nearly a month and a half, I still don't need to mow my lawn. It's so dry out here. But anyway, nasty conditions, very sketchy grip, but the Volvos with that all-wheel drive, they were just able to muscle right through, and we saw O'Connell get twitchy several times coming out of turn 5 down in turn 6 coming out of the S's.
Yeah, the only thing that was kind of, well, one of the things that was interesting that race was Lawson Aschenbach was able to come from further back in the field and pass all of the Cadillacs in that rain race, the second race. And that was interesting to watch. It was good racing. The races didn't go to the level of last year. I was thoroughly excited by what I saw last year. But that said,
there was a lot more. There was a lot more
contact.
Yes. let's not be subtle about it. There was a lot more hockey being played last year.
Good on
hip checked into the wall.
Good on World Challenge. Glad to see them continuing to put on good shows. If you haven't seen World Challenge, look them up on their schedule and check out an event. Good stuff.
They do broadcast their races live, so go to World Challenge. I think it's just world-challenge.com, isn't it?
It's world-challenge, as they were saying this weekend, but yes.
Hyphen-catch, whatever.
And then the other sports car series that was racing this weekend, of course, was ALMS. And let's not really mince too much on this. Everybody was there to see the GT class and the Corvettes. The Corvette of Gavin and Milner was able to take class victory. Only 0.283 seconds over the Flying Lizard of Jörg Burgmeister, their Porsche. So, very interesting race overall. That said, though, the rest of the class is the rest of the four other classes. I don't really think there's any reason to talk about them.
Now, the couple of neat things was the new Vipers were out, and they looked good. They sounded good. They didn't race good.
No.
One of the things I loved seeing every year going to Mid-Ohio was the Robertson Racing Ford GTs. I'm in love with that car, and it sounds so incredible. And in fact, it was the best-sounding car until the Cadillacs came back to World Challenge. And still, those Cadillacs sound just freaking sweet. But anyway, they are not racing this year. At least they weren't at Mid-Ohio. So I was kind of bummed. I didn't get my Ford GT fix.
Nah. Well. Anyways, is that all we have? Is that the motorsports in brief then?
Yeah. Let's move on to greener pastures because there's more fun stuff to talk about in the IndyCar race.
Yeah. Well, let's change gears again as we get into the IndyCar race. And the first thing right out of the gate was the fact that Helio Castroneves hurt his hand, much less Charlie Kimball had hurt his hand in the test and broke his hand, was not in the car as we talked about. Helio had some contact as well, and that was us. And that was another factor, was that he had actually bruised his hand big time. So I mean, he thought he had broken it, and thankfully it was just swollen.
Yeah. A bit of a mess. I mean, sorry, Doug, I got to jump in here for one quick thing. The last thing he wants to do right now is injure his hand and jeopardize his lucrative dancing career.
Well, I think it's more than that. He's embroiled right in the middle of the championship. And, when I heard about his hand, I couldn't help but think that the MotoGP guys, Colin Edwards falls off, breaks his collarbone. You know, just throw some pins on it and wrap me up in tape. I'm good. And I thought surely Helio would say, no, it's fine. See, I can move it. As he's sitting here flexing him with his other hand. It's fine. Just wrap me up. But I guess that doesn't quite happen that way in IndyCar. You have to pass medical, and they get to say whether you drive or not.
Yeah, as you see down in the corner, we've got actually the highlights for Mid-Ohio playing as we talk about the race weekend. So that's pretty nice. Thanks to the producers John Wessling and J.D. Webb for putting that together for us. Thanks, guys. Well, on top of that, let's talk about are we talking about qualifications now?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
New track record.
Yeah, DW12. New DW12 looking pretty damn good out there on Mid-Ohio. I mean, those cars were getting it.
Yeah, track record was previously held by a Champ Car test of the DP01 back in 2007. That was 106.280, and you know, they came over the broadcast and said first ever 105 at Mid Ohio.
Yeah, that was cool. That was very cool. What was it? A minute 5.8, I think, was fast time, something like that.
Yeah, and I think it even got below that. Let me pull up the qualifying results. 105.647 was the pole speed from Willpower.
There you
go. Then, yeah, that was the, that's the quickest one recorded in the qualifying results. However, I don't know what he put up in previous rounds, so it might have even been quicker. So, yeah, Willpower stormed to the pole and was able to hold that fairly convincingly. Dario Franchitti qualified second. Simon Pagino third. Alex Tagliani, who was sporting a nice Purdue sticker on his grill this weekend. That was pretty sweet.
Well, it's a matter of opinion.
Yeah. Scott Dixon qualified fifth, and Ryan Briscoe qualified sixth. Other notables, Sebastian Bourdais in seventh. Go on down the line. Giorgio Pantano qualified 24th. Not the best qualifying result, but he showed much better on race day.
Yeah, he definitely had pace. He just didn't have a good qualifying run.
Yeah.
It was certainly qualifying, especially in Mid Ohio, just so important. Mm-hmm. And to not have a good run just simply kills you. So, all right. Well, are we going to talk about the race now? Are we going to talk about the race?
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, let's go ahead and move on to the race, because we've talked about qualifying, and, you know, qualifying is only so much. That's what we do. But we had the race, and we had some interesting things for the race. Before we get actually into the race, we had the NBC Sports Network guys on the ESPN ABC thing, because NASCAR was at two separate locations. Thankfully, Marty Reed went to, Iowa, and stayed out of Ohio, went out to Iowa to cover the NASCAR Nationwide Series, then obviously with ESPN and all of them running the NASCAR Sprint Cup race on their channel, it kind of didn't leave any commentators. They didn't call me. I don't know why. I think that IndyCar at Mid-Ohio would have been awesome had I been drunk. So, I'm kind of upset about that.
The FCC might have had something to say about that.
Yeah, well, you know, the FCC, well,
put Sean on a 5-second delay.
Yeah, exactly. But so we had the NBC Sports Network guys working the race, and we got off right out of the gate. We also had the push to pass delay, where, you know, we had the 5-second delay, which everybody was super critical about, but we'll get to that. But the race, Mike, take it away. Doug, you guys were there. Tell me about this race.
Well, it was awesome. I'm just enjoying these races that go flag to flag with no yellows in between. Of course, there are local yellows for various incidents, but flag to flag strategies played out. You had the majority of the field running a 3-stop strategy, whereas majority of the field running a 2-stop strategy, and then a few cars like Hinch and Kanaan were running a 3-stop strategy. And that was fun to watch the differences in those. As far as the flow of the race, man, it was just enjoyable because you could sit back and see the strategies play out instead of having it all, you know, grind to a halt when the safety car or, you know, yellows come out. Not that great on the ratings, though. It was 0.6 overnight. But then again, it was up against the Olympics and NASCAR and all of that. So.
Quasi up against NASCAR if you count the raid delay.
Yeah, well, that's
or whatever
true.
That was.
Yeah, the push to pass kind of played into this race. The drivers were panning what they did. They went through with the push to pass and made it so you couldn't be reactive with it. They put in a 5-second delay on the push to pass.
So you couldn't use it as a push to not be passed.
Couldn't as easily. I mean, you'd have to predict. You couldn't just respond to somebody pushing it. You had to be able to predict that they're going to try and overtake me here, push it before the corner, and then as you're coming out of the corner, it would kick in because there's a 5-second delay. Once you pushed it, 5 seconds later, the power came in.
So make it active instead of reactive, as you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, a lot.
That may change, but it seemed to work out pretty well further back in the pack.
No, it was yeah, it worked better in the pack, but I mean, a lot of the drivers, when you look at them, I mean, they were real critical about the whole entire situation and how that particular system worked with the delay. I know that Will Power, Simon Pagenaud, just to mention a couple, were quite perturbed and were upset because they just couldn't. They just felt they couldn't use it the way they wanted to. I mean, it forced them to change the style, I guess, basically, and how they were doing things, and they were not particularly happy about that.
When it comes on, is it a step function or is it a ramp function?
I think it's just like...
Because I could see, especially, you hit it going into a corner, and, all of a sudden you're full throttle accelerating out, coming down the kink, and it hits... And maybe you're right in the middle of that kink, where you're easing to the right just a little bit, and suddenly you got a crap load more horsepower. Does that upset the balance of the car at all? As opposed to coming onto the power through a step function, through a ramp function, doing it slowly.
We are talking about IndyCar's version of push to pass this year, and crap load is not exactly what I would determine the correct name for the amount of horsepower they get.
You know what I'm saying, though.
Yeah, it could upset the car. Maybe that's part of their complaint. But all of that said, I hate to see the push to not be passed employed. Anything you can do to get away from it, I'm happy with. Hey, I'm even happier if you take the button off it in the first place.
Hey, there's an idea.
Great idea. Last thing we want to do is to put in anything that would upset this great racing balance we've had this year.
I was going to say, the series comes out and says, the formula's so good we don't even need aero kits, but we need push to pass. What?
Exactly. What?
What the hell? Okay, then.
You know
better than I do. Who am I? I mean, I'm just a fan. Don't listen to me. But the push to pass was certainly interesting. And then we also had what other kinds of interesting things? We had again the lack of caution flags.
Yeah, the lack. No, of
I was.
Go ahead.
I was really surprised by this. To be honest, I mean, you remember that deluge we had, Mike?
Yeah.
You're looking at a completely green track. Well, and even worse than that, because you had the USF 2000 guys come out and lay down Cooper rubber, and then the ALMS guys laying down a mixture of Kumho, Yokohama, and Michelin. And Dunlop.
you had all
this non-Firestone rubber being laid down on the track, on a green track. And so I really expected the circuit to be just super duper slick, and no one found China Beach. That really, really surprised me. I was stunned.
Yeah, I mean, we did have somebody go off. Who was that got punted into China Beach?
He didn't get punted into it, really. Kind of surfed through it a little bit and in and
out.
It was
a clean race. I mean, you saw those cars come through on the initial start through the S's, and, it was precision driving. It was very, very close driving. What series are we watching?
it was a definite pucker moment there at the beginning of the race. But doggone it, if they didn't all make it through cleanly, I was surprised. I thought Shirley would see, and it's not like we hadn't seen bonehead moves from some of these same people here at Mid Ohio in the past. I keep thinking of Marco upside down on his lid. There in the S's after a what was that? Was that 2009?
Ooh,
they ended up upside down.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. That was a mess.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, I think a lot of it can be attributed to that DW12 though, and those carbon or not carbon. I'm sorry. Carbon.
The carbon ceramics.
Yeah, the carbon ceramic brakes. I mean, you get once they're warm. I mean, you get better production than the brakes they were having. Where you know when you go down that long straightaway into the S's, or you know you start to climb into the S's where all of that is. I mean, you can really get on the brakes and actually get it to stick. Whereas before, you were having issues because you were trying to get on the brakes, and then you just, slide right through it, and you're done. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Ask Takuma Sato, who's having a fantastic run last year, and then he goes, off into the gravel, and that was all she wrote. So, you know, it certainly is, I think a lot has to do with the actual car, and I think it's been, you know, really fantastic. To see that, you know, drivers can push the limits of their skills in the car because of the car itself. So I think that's great. Now, say what you will about the push-pass, whatever, not so great. But the actual formula of the car and of the DW12 is producing phenomenal racing and really allowing the drivers to take things into their own hands and use their skills, which is you know what you always want to see in a race car driver and in a race, obviously. So great stuff, honestly, from that standpoint. Let's also look Franchitti and Hinchcliffe.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Franchitti didn't have all that good of a race. He started in second and kind of drifted back through the pack, and he was back around Hinchcliffe. He was coming out of the pits after his second stop, and he managed to nerf Hinchcliffe with his front wing. Dario ended up finishing 17th after changing his front wing. Again, you know, I'm going to have to say this, man. I love the front wing on this car, and I love the rear wheel pods on this car, and here's the reason. Franchitti misjudged the rear end of Hinch's car, and it didn't ruin Hinch's race by getting his tire cut down. I think that's phenomenal.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That is it exactly. In the past, it would have cost Hinch a serious amount of time, because it would have cut, as you said, it would have cut down his rear tire. Maybe they pull him back. Maybe he has to go a lap on a junked up tire. It would have cost him his race. You know, and you know, maybe maybe Franchitti's wing stays intact and he gets off scot free.
Yeah.
You know, and now those rear bumpers, wherever you want to call them, they're not necessarily doing what they were originally intended, what the motivation to put those on, were, you know, to keep one car from coming up over the top of another. But what they are having the positive effect of making sure that the person who makes a mistake is the one who suffers the most. You know, as you had mentioned, you know, Franchitti had you know, his wing broken, and Hinch goes on. You know, Franchitti just didn't start out the day well. Saturday was great. Friday, well, the whole weekend was great for him until the Sunday morning warm-up, which they did in the wet, which I didn't really get. I wondered about the wisdom, and you know, I might have gone out for a leak check, and that would have been it. I don't think I would have done a lap at speed. And you know, Dario ended up, he wasn't the only one. There were a lot of other drivers spinning around. The place was like glass.
Ed Carpenter.
Well, you know, that's completely other issue.
Yeah, I saw him walking through the pits, and he was stone-faced.
he was not having a good weekend.
No,
but anyway, Dario Gusek coming out of turn 5 down the hill into turn 6. Just got on the gas a little too much, a little too early, and spun it around and broke off his front wing and backed into the tire barrier, which is why later in the race, of course, you notice that he was running one of Scotty D's wings after the Hinchcliffe incident, right?
Yeah.
That's because he had already used his from his incident in the morning warm-up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and move on and talk about James Hinchcliffe. Actually, we just were talking about him, the sharp kid out of Canada. He chose to run a three-stop strategy, going, what was it, black, and then just going red till the end on the tire selection.
He pitted early around, like, lap 12 or so. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, that was, like, around, then, like, lap 7 or some weird thing like that. I don't know. Yeah, it was
then,
real early.
Then went red to finish up the race. Was doing qualifying laps. Had a phenomenal race and was able to improve from 15th to 5th for the finish. So, excellent race for him. But in a similar vein, Tony Kanaan was also on a three-stopper. And he finished 6th from 18th. So some really good moving through the field for those guys, and those strategies would have been completely thrown out the window if they had yellows.
Yeah, true.
At that point, they would have had to have hoped that the yellows would hit their pit strategies just right, and it would have been a mess. Well, it would have been for everybody. It's just the nature of yellows and full-course yellows on these circuits. Ryan Hunter-Reay had some interesting problems. His engine soured. They were saying that his engine was taking too much fuel on the injector system, and he ended up stopping before the end of the race, mainly to get a free engine change.
And he's slowing down.
Yeah, pretty much. Killer day for him, because, you know, come in leading the championship by 20-some points and leave not leading the championship. You got to know that that's dreadfully painful, especially for Andretti, who, you know, it was kind of surprising that they were leading the championship and to have it disappear like that. And then also Hunter-Reay is now on his last engine, where before he had two engines in hand. It's tightening up for him.
Yeah.
And with three races left, it's all to play for.
Yeah, for sure. Well, one guy who made the best of a situation, Will Power, was dominating pretty much that race for the longest time. But again, we've seen that the tight pit boxes, so to speak, of course, at Mid-Ohio proved to be troublesome for Mr. Power, and Dixon was able to get out ahead of Will Power, and that was the move, essentially, on pit road that won the race for Scott Dixon, mainly because of the lack of cautions and the field kind of spreading out. But because of that, we were able to have Scott Dixon take P1 yeah, as I predicted exclusively.
Mr. Mid Ohio, as they called him over the PA.
Yeah, first four time winner at Mid Ohio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, brilliant stuff there for him. Great work by the always solid Ganassi guys. Not a lot Power could really do. I don't think it was so much to blame on his team as much as the pit boxes there at Mid Ohio are just so small.
And everything is tight at Mid Ohio.
Yeah, and so you just gotta work your way out there, and it just didn't work for Will Power, obviously.
Yeah, Power and Dixon were on the exact same pit strategy. They came in at the exact same time, and Dixon pit right behind Power. Dixon had clean entry to his pit both times he came in, and then Power had to do this interesting little dogleg dodge. It made the front tire changer have to be way out of the way because the front wing sweep as it came through for Power's car, whereas Dixon's guys were just set up and ready to go because he was driving straight in. Can't get much better than that. It was really close on the first pit stop. Dixon almost got him on the first pit stop.
Yeah.
But the second one was just way too much, and whew.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've seen the race kind of come out of the pits, and you know, the passing was there for this race. I've seen a lot more passing on the TV than what I thought I would see. I thought it was a good race. It was a good proper race without any kind of cautions. It's the best, I guess, you could hope for without the restarts and bunching the field up. But they are hinting that perhaps there could be circuit changes for 2013. We know that Mid-Ohio is focused on IndyCar and wants the IndyCar championship at that track, and they're willing to perhaps make some changes to the circuit to spice up the racing a little bit in 2013 to bring more of an on-track product. Because it's just unique because Mid-Ohio is so fast. and it flows. There's a lot of corners, natural terrain.
It's a momentum course.
Yeah, you got to have the momentum. And unfortunately, what that does is it makes it really difficult for people to, you know, to get those overtakes. And, you know, Mid-Ohio said, well, you know, maybe we can, maybe we can change things up a bit because
we are
committed.
What are they planning on doing?
Well, that's the thing. Trackside Online talked with Mid-Ohio, with Savory and his group that now own the track, and they've explored options with an engineering firm. They had an idea what they were going to do. They didn't really say what they were going to do, but they had some ideas, and then they decided to completely go back and re-examine it. So they've got another engineering firm working on it, and it sounds like they're very cognizant that they don't want to screw up this track. And
please tell me they didn't send an email to Herman Tilke.
No, nice. He was not CC'd.
Okay, good.
I don't know what they're planning on doing. I don't know what they have room to do. You know, my take on it is something different is going to happen with the, coming out of the kink and going down to the keyhole. That's just my take. I don't know where you could make serious changes to this track.
Mm-hmm. No, I really don't either.
Because
now without really drastically changing the character of the track.
So, something the track needs is more room in pit lane. And I don't know how you do that, because you can't screw up the carousel. You just can't.
No.
You know? And you got that bridge over the kink, and it's going to be pretty dang expensive if you want to do anything there. So it will be quite telling to see what kind of changes they are able to make to actually spice up the racing and maintain the character of the course. So
yeah.
You know,
we'll see.
It could just be as simply as reprofiling a couple of turns with, you know, wider runoff or something like that. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and take a look at how things shake out for the results. Actually, if you could take us through that, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hang on. No, Doug, yeah. If you could take us through it. Yeah. There it is. Got it up.
Okay.
IndyCar and their desire to put their results out in PDF form. Mm. Morons. Anyway.
I like PDF.
PDF is fine. But yes, exactly.
Scott on the fly.
A Dick's race, obviously. Will Power finished second. Simon Pagenaud had a very good race. Was able to finish third. Sebastian Bourdais fourth. James Hinchcliffe, the quickest of the three stoppers. Too much beer. And Tony Kanaan finishing sixth. Ryan Briscoe had a rather disappointing day. He drifted back to seventh. And other notables, Graham Rahal, home track, finished 11th. Sarah Fisher's Joseph Newgarden finished 12th. Giorgio Pantano finished 14th. And as much as I want to see him knock somebody off the track so I can call him Puntano, he showed very well for himself. Beyond that, man, it was just a good weekend all around. I really enjoyed the race. Really enjoyed everything I saw.
Got to give mad props to Bourdais. Mm-hmm. What did you say? Fourth is where he came in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a hell of a run for that team.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, we know that he's quality stuff, but, I mean, he's not in a powerhouse team by any stretch. Mm-hmm. And he had a good weekend all around. So, good on him and the Dragon Racing team.
Yeah, well, taking a look at the championship shakes out like this. Will Power takes the points lead with 379. Ryan Hunter-Reay loses a spot to second place, 5 points off of Mr. Power's gearbox. Castro Neves third. Scott Dixon moves up is fourth and is actually making quite the splash here for the championship, trying to open it up to a 4-car race after we thought it would be a 3-car race, honestly.
And you look at the three tracks that are left, and I think I favor Scott Dixon at Sonoma, and I favor him at Fontana.
Mm-hmm. Definitely favor him at Fontana. I may have to give the nod to Will Power at Sonoma. Mm-hmm. But I think that Dixon could do very well at Sonoma. I think he'll make him earn it. That's for sure.
Very similar type of track to Mid-Ohio.
Yeah, true. So, let's talk about our picks real quick. The Open Paddock Podium Pick Challenge, which I'm not going to say anything because the winner shouldn't have to. So I think my results speak for themselves.
Did you look at the picks? Because Doug beat you.
Oh, what did he
pick? Oh!
Dixon, Power, Pagenaud, and that puts him at 25 for the weekend. You're just at 20.
That's okay, because Doug's so far out of it that it's whatever.
What I tell you, I tell you, I'm making my move.
My move. Albeit like 12 weeks too late. But
Hurt turtles.
But, all right, well, let's talk real quick about the news, because we are running a bit short on time here. Go ahead and head through the news, and then just try to bear with. But it looks like, it doesn't look like, Graham Rahal is not going to be with Ganassi Racing in his NTB, National Tire and Battery
Service Central
car. Looks like he's not, Ganassi's not going to pick up the option on Rahal.
Yeah,
that's a mistake.
Well, I think it's a mistake for Ganassi. Yes, however, Ganassi was reportedly pretty upset that Rahal went immediately to the media and said, "Hey, I don't have contract for next year because Ganassi wants to negotiate and all that kind of stuff." But you can't blame Rahal, who look what happened to him when he was at Newman Haas.
Yep,
his ride disappeared. He's not going to sit there and let it happen again, and he does have options. And he's a marketable name. The least he could do is go to his dad's team, and there's plenty of other options beyond that. So
yeah, it'll be interesting.
I don't think he could do much better than Ganassi right now. I guess there's always a chance that Briscoe's going to disappear, and he would get that spot. But I just don't see that happening.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, well, we got some other stuff going on as well, because Rubens Barrichello has said, he's obviously said that he'd like to stay with IndyCar, but he may not stay with KV, the team that brought him into the championship. Barrichello talking about, that he's not throwing in the towel at KV, but rather he would and is discussing, potential options with other race teams.
And why wouldn't he?
Well, yeah, he should. He's shown brilliantly in the KV car.
Well, so, I don't know if I would say brilliantly, but he's not embarrassed himself.
Well, he's done fantastic for the fact that he's only had one year in the car.
But let's be completely forthright about this. We expected more out of that KV car this year.
Well, yeah.
Yes. The KV, and I expected more out of him.
I especially expected more out of Kanaan and Barrichello together. We were Andretti's in the position I thought KV was going to be in this year.
Oh, nice. Yep, that makes sense. It's been a tough year with the engines and everything, and I think KV was just a little, missed it just a little bit this year. But I think they'll be back. I think they'll do phenomenal next year. All things depending. But I know that Kanaan's going to want to do a better job because his season's been just horrid. So.
Yeah. Other news around, AJ Allmendinger supposedly, Michael Shank is searching for sponsorship to run Allmendinger next year in IndyCar.
Interesting.
I guess he would have to pass IndyCar's drug test first.
I'm not a big fan of that.
No.
I am a fan of it because I believe in, I guess at the end of the day, I believe in second chances. I know that it was stupid. I know the way he's handling it is just atrocious from a PR standpoint. But I am for second chances. If he can pass the IndyCar drug test, I'm fine with that. And I wouldn't mind seeing him in Shank's car or even Foyt's car. Like I put on Twitter the other day, it's time for AJ Allmendinger to just come home. Come on home, lad.
I think. Yeah, first of all, this is very premature. We have to wait and see what happens with NASCAR, because if he has any chance to run a NASCAR, he's going to stay there. He actually makes money there, and he would not running for Shank. If AJ Allmendinger was coming back to IndyCar, I don't think Shank would be his best option.
No.
Might be one of his only options, though.
Maybe, because he's kind of like part owner of that effort, isn't he? Something like that.
Yeah, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah, he's tied at the hip with him, for sure.
It's going to be tough for him to get sponsorship in any form of motorsport, honestly, after this. So he's going to have to bring maybe a little bit of his own personal money if he really wants to drive. And it's going to cost him to rebuild his credibility in any form of motorsport, I think, whether that be NASCAR or whether that be IndyCar. So
yeah.
It'll be definitely an interesting story to watch unfold. You guys had something happen while you were out there, an announcement happened that AJ Foyt is announced Chase Austin will race for him at the Indianapolis 500 in 2013.
Yes.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's pretty cool. I mean, the idea of having an African-American driver running at the Indy 500 again, yeah, it's phenomenal, and it's good for the sport. It's good that this guy has been around and he's done multiple disciplines, everything from dirt racing to NASCAR to Indy Lights. He's pretty multifaceted in that, at least in his experience level. So getting him out to the Indy 500 is a pretty good move. Having it announced this early is rather surprising, though, right?
Yes, it is. And you know, I will say that Austin has had. He's had some decent runs in lights, but he's not done anything outstanding in lights. And I'd really like to see, instead of an effort to put him in the 500, I'd rather see him develop. Yes, I'd rather see him in lights in a quality program for a full season. Have a full season to really develop his racecraft in these cars. Before going into the 500.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look here because we're really cutting close. We might run over just a couple minutes, so if you want to hang with us for the Mazda Road to Indy. But we do have news that Dragon has added Catherine Legg to Sonoma. They got an engine for that second chassis, so they will be at Sonoma. I don't think there's really a whole lot to talk about there. But that being said, let's just say
no surprise because of all the sponsors that they've got involved in. Sonoma is just such a good place to activate those sponsors.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. But we'll go ahead.
You kind of like wine.
Yeah. I do, actually. But let's go ahead and move on to the Mazda Road Indy. Doug, you have literally, I mean literally, 2 minutes to go through this on the time.
Okay. So. Real quick. It looked pretty much that it was going to be when the weekend started, it looked like it was going to be the Spencer Pigot and Matthew Brabham show all over again. except Matthew Brabham in qualifying, they qualified 1 and 2, but Brabs was had run afoul of the regulations. He had tires that weren't properly registered. The ones that had been nominated for competition were not the ones that he used.
Okay.
And so his laps were discounted, and he started from the back of the pack, back of a 30-car pack.
Ouch.
And he then went on to just slice his way through the grid, picking off one car after another to finish in third.
Nice.
So he goes from worst to podium. Fantastic drive by Matty Brabs. Spencer Pigot, no surprise, ran away with the race and scored the win. Scott Anderson scored his first podium of the year for Andretti Autosport. And so, nice little run. Hang on, I'm double-guessing myself. I'm sorry. I'm glad I did check. Bellardi Auto Racing. Pardon me. McGregor and Blackstock are the Andretti Autosport duo. Scott Anderson, number 14 for Bellardi Auto Racing, finished second. So that's his first podium of the season. Nice run, and he would improve upon that in race two with a victory.
Nice.
Race two really went poor for the Cape Motorsports duo Pigot and Brabham. They ended up taking each other out.
Oops!
And it was a wet start. Weren't sure whether some were going to stay out on the treads or come in and get slicks. But anyway, they ended up taking each other out and running through the grass. And Scott Anderson took full advantage of it, and scored his first race win, and Bellardi Autosport. Well, in fact, it's the first win by anyone other than Matthew Brabham or Spencer Pigot this year. In second was Matthew DeLeo, who had his second podium, his best finish of the season, and he's a privateer. He's he's basically finding the ride himself, doing a great job.
All right.
And in third there in race two was Trent Hindman. So salvaging something for the Cape guys. Now that was in the champion class. Now this is the first time I've gotten to see the national class in competition this year. Of course, I was at the night before the 500, but that was just the championship class only. And I will tell you that the Formula Enterprise cars, side by side with the Van Diemen's that we're used to seeing in US 50,000, those Formula Enterprise cars look super sharp. I really like the way they look. But anyway, the first race, RC Enerson scored the class win. Mm-hmm. And then Heinrich Peruseth was second, and they flip-flopped in race two, with Peruseth taking the class victory and Enerson coming in P2. That means that they stay pretty much exactly like they were before the summer break, that is, with RC Enerson 1 point ahead in the National Class Championship.
All right, well, let's talk about Trois-Rivières as the Indy Lights of the Star Mazda headline that event.
Yeah, the Trois-Rivières race number one, no surprise, Jack Hawksworth takes pole, wins from pole. Hello, this is the same movie we've been seeing over and over and over again all season long, right?
Yep.
Until something weird happens. But, you know, it wasn't just that he won from pole. He won, he led... Sage Karam came in second by 24 seconds.
Ouch.
It was 24 seconds ahead of the rest of the field. An incredible drive by Hawksworth. Race two was wet. or it didn't start wet. It started dry, and they red flagged it when the rain started to come, something that Sage Karam was very excited about. And they all put on treads and got out there and went after it, and Karam was able to get past Hawksworth and set just a blistering pace in the rain. Hawksworth, trying to keep pace with Karam, made a mistake and slammed it right into the wall.
Oops.
And you know, this was an important win for Karam, because this was his first Star Mazda win on a street course, street or road course.
Mm-hmm.
His other wins have all been on ovals.
I see.
So to win, especially at Trois-Rivières, really fantastic. And I love what he said here after Hawksworth had slid off. He said he slid off into the tires trying to keep up with me, and after that, all I had to do was not make any mistakes. I mean, it's just that easy, right? Just don't make any mistakes, and away you go. So it's just like, that's all I had to do. But anyway, you know, fantastic win by Sage Karam. Unfortunately, with Hawksworth taking the win early, he wasn't able to close up the gap a whole lot. But Hawksworth finished 12th in that second race compared to Sage Karam's second place finish in the first race. So he's got the lead down to 41 points. It's going to take a lot more work to close it here in the next next five events, three venues, five events. I don't know if he can do it, but you know, I tell you what, he's it's not for want of trying or ability of trying. He's really doing a great job. The headliner at Trois-Rivières was the Firestone Indy Lights, and in his home country, Tristan Vautier is French. And here I just thinking of Quebec, France did the same, right?
Just about.
Okay, well, maybe not. But anyway, Tristan Vautier there in Quebec at Trois-Rivières, he was pretty much the class of the field all weekend long, with best practice times. Started from pole, won from pole, scoring his third victory of the season. It was hard fought, though. At the beginning of the race, Peter Dempsey started in fifth, and within a couple of turns had passed had passed Wattier for the lead, and had maintained that, had stayed in front of him for several laps until his gearbox gave out. Like, oh, man, you know, if this guy doesn't, do himself in, it's something mechanical that does him in, or something political, or there always seems something, you know?
Yeah.
So unfortunately, mechanical failure for Dempsey takes him out. Gustavo Yacomin had a great run and came in second at the at Trois Rivières, and that's not going to get him anywhere near the front, but it does close up the gap to Sebastian Saavedra, who did not finish this race. I'm trying to think what happened to Saavedra.
Something.
something happened. And I'm sorry for not having those notes. I was more focused on the USF 2000 stuff this weekend. But anyway, he did not finish the race. There was a slew of people that didn't, but Saavedra was amongst them. And mechanical issues were responsible for it. It's a very, very bumpy track, Trois Rivières.
Yeah.
So it was Gustavo Yacomin in second, catching up a little bit to Sebastian Saavedra, and Carlos Munoz had his second podium in a row, coming off his victory at Edmonton and third place at Trois Rivières, moving up nicely ahead of Victor Carbonet now. And so he slots up into fifth in the championship standings.
All right.
But Wattier with his win here at Trois Rivières, and Esteban Guerrieri, who leads the championship, finishing fourth, he was able to close that gap a little bit. Now there is only 7 points between them. So Baltimore Fontana, it's time to push. Whoever wins those two races is going to be your champion. It's going to be tight, tight, tight. And I know I'm a little bit over, but there's your Mazda Road to Indy recap.
All right. Well, you've done well. And that's all we have for the show. But I do want to let you know that ETV Live, the premium home, the in my opinion, best location to catch live broadcasted sim racing. We got some events coming up. Wednesday, August 8th, which is actually tomorrow. Holy cow. We're going to have the SSCA, Simulation Sports Car Associates, racing in their IndyCar championship. And that's going to be at the Iowa Motor Speedway for the Iowa Indy 125. That's going to come your way at about 9:30 Eastern time. Friday night, August 10th, we're going to have the usual Friday night showdown with the NASCAR Nationwide Impala B cars at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. J.D. Webb, our producer, as well as Mike Conti, will be in the booth calling the action for you. And then Saturday, August the 11th, I'm not done. I'm not done broadcasting this week. Because Saturday, August the 11th, we have Race Department's iRacing Le Mans Series 2012 Summer Tour, bringing you the 2 hours of Texas for their American Le Mans Championship, or American Le Mans Style Championship, with the HPD ARX01C, the Chevrolet Corvette C6R, as well as the Ford GT. So those events you can look forward to being streamed for you here on ETV Live, premium home for sim racing broadcasting. And then also, don't forget, next week, right as Open Paddock goes live at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, I will take on the producer, J.D. Webb, the guy who's talked so much shit, it's ridiculous, about beating me around the track at Michigan International Speedway. I'm going to take him on in a fixed setup race that will be broadcast on ETV Live leading up to the podcast. And I'm sure there'll be some friendly banter and trash talking there, but it's going to be a great event. And I look forward to putting JD back where he belongs in the broadcasting, or in the, not the broadcasting booth, but rather the director's booth. I'm going to put him one step beyond the broadcaster's booth. So that's exactly how that's going to go down. So, but I want to thank, what? Yep.
I know that sports betting is illegal, but virtual sports betting?
It can happen.
Can I set up a book?
You can set up the book, and we're going to go ahead and take it.
Sweet.
So JD's yelling at me, lock and load, son. So, yeah, we'll see. You can lock and load your director's equipment when you go back where you belong. No, I'm kidding. So, but it's going to be fun. I can't wait to race him. Bets are open, and I am willing to race for alcohol.
Yeah, this is our last broadcast on ETV Live. Thanks, Sean.
Yeah, right, exactly. It says bring your A game, kid. Yeah, well, that's the only game I know how to bring. So, JD, once I win, you can go ahead and put that money for some booze in my PayPal account, and I'll go ahead and pick up a nice bottle of Russia or Finland's best vodka for the next show. So, but that's all we have for tonight. I want to thank everybody, each and every one of you, for coming and listening to the show live. I want to thank each and every one of you for downloading the podcast. You can find it over at openpaddock.net, or you can head over to iTunes and you can download us there, Open Space Paddock. If you like what we're doing, go ahead and leave us a review. If you don't like what we're doing, go ahead and leave us a review and tell us exactly what it is that we're not doing right, and we'll fix it for you. And we're going to work to integrate more things into the broadcast as we go. But I want to say thank you to everybody, and for Mike and Doug and the whole crew here at ETV Live, I want to say have a great night and have a great week. Thank you.